This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana Friday Politics on WRKF 89.3 Baton Rouge and WWNO 89.9 New Orleans. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Signature support is from the East Baton Rouge Parish Mayor's Office. Sharon Weston Broom is, of course, the mayor. And our show originates from Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Again, your number, 877-217-5757. Later in the hour, we'll have a special treat. Richard Lipsy, who's with us every now and then, but it's been a few years, been much too long. He's been a mover and shaker in Louisiana life in many facets. And back in the day when he was a young lad in his early 20s, fresh out of LSU, he was the guard assigned to President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And, of course, he was the person who was presiding over the autopsy of President Kennedy on 22 November 1963, when Richard was barely 24 years old. But we begin with Scott Wilfong and Dane Sherman. Scott, a noted Republican political consultant. Dane, a Democratic blogger. Dane's in Hammond. Scott's in studio, and there's much happening. And our governor is certainly being an active fellow. And the latest front page story, it took 3 days, but the Advocate did put it on the front page today. The Advocate and Picayune Governor Jeff Landry yesterday pushed state higher education leaders to mandate that student athletes be present at games as the national anthem is played, days after blasting the LSU women's basketball team for an absence during the anthem at a game this week. In letters to the boards of LSU, UL, Southern, the Louisiana Community and Technical Colleges system, and the State Board of Regents, Governor Landry said the LSU women's basketball team showed a lack of respect for the U.S. and their school by being absent during the anthem Monday at the Elite Eight game against Iowa in Albany, New York. Dane Sherman, we'll start with you. Your thoughts about where the governor is going and whether this is an appropriate remedy to what he perceives as a serious issue.
Yeah, this is a crazy, crazy thing. First off, has he not watched a football game or a basketball game with LSU in forever? And the other thing is, not only is that bad, that it embarrasses him and embarrasses the state, but these are coaches' decisions. You know, if he wants to put a crazy resolution out against the coaches, fine. I'm all for it. Go after the people with the $100 million contract and the $30 million contract and that kind of stuff. But the players do what they're told, and they're preparing for the game. So this is just silly overreach. And the people at LSU, I'm talking about Bill Tate, they need to stand up to this now and don't put it off. And I think it's just it's ridiculous. It's Huey P. Landry kind of move. And I think Louisiana, from what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing, they're not having it.
Scott Wilfong, well, how do you look at it?
Dane and I agree on many things, but this is not one of them. Look, I assure you that whatever preparation Kim Mulkey and those girls needed to do for that game, it was not greater than what Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs needed to do at the Super Bowl. And when I watched the Super Bowl, those guys were standing on the sideline listening to the national anthem and showing respect for the flag. This is a no-brainer. Shut up, LSU. Go stand on the court and listen to the national anthem. It takes about a minute and a half. It isn't going to interfere with your game, and every NFL team in America does it. So get over it.
Well, we have talked about this a few times this week, and we'll move on to other topics. But people are engaged. I'm at Louis. People are buzzing about this. And
they buzzed about it when Colin Kaepernick wanted to kneel, disaster.
Okay,
for
I got
PR,
you. Well, that's maybe part of the issue is that coaches, rather than take the risk of somebody protesting, it's just better not to have people present. That may be the way they look at it. I can't read their minds, but is this much ado about nothing, or is it really something? But my guess, LSU is dependent, as is every other university, on funding from the state, and the governor has great latitude when it comes to funding all facets of state government. Bill Tate's in a bad spot. I would imagine he will implore his coaches, Dane, to be present and to have their players present when the national anthem is played.
Well, here's where my buddy Scott and I disagree. Again, it's the coaches, and I think it's their plans. And, you know, if Tate wants to address the coaches, address the coaches. but I don't think it's a player issue. I think it's a coach issue.
Well, I agree with Dane on that. I do agree with Dane on that. They've got to do what the coaches say. But that's an even easier win, Bill Tate. You got Kim Mulkey and you got, what's that fellow that makes so much money? Oh, Brian Kelly. Just tell them to get on the field. Yeah, don't hold the players responsible, but tell the coaches, get on the blank field and listen to the national anthem.
Well, it used to be played right before the game, and now it's not. And so coaches want to spend a lot of time with their players. And of the four teams that played Monday night, three of them were not present for the national anthem, but Iowa was, and it made LSU look bad. And so
they won easily. So don't tell me about preparation.
It was a good game. It was 94-87.
But it didn't cost him anything.
All right. 877-217-5757. Mario in New Orleans. Mario, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I'd just like to point out that Republicans are the party of big government, and then we need to accept that and move forward with that kind of messaging, because it's just the truth. Everything they want to do is about controlling people's lives and micromanaging. So I think this is a good example of it.
Well, I think there's a party that wants to mandate that abortion's available for everyone.
Well, that would be abortion available. That's right. That would be less government, not more government. But let's not go there. We have other issues that are on the front burner at the state capitol. The Ten Commandments, another thing that is near and dear to many. And, of course, those of us who try to adhere to them. Edwin Edwards once said, I'm pretty good at obeying 9 of 10 of them, but the House Education Committee voted 10-3 to advance a bill to require public schools to display the Ten Commandments. House Bill 71 by Representative Dee Dee Horton, Republican from Houghton, is attempting to navigate the traditional legal divide between church and state. Under the bill, which now goes to the House floor, the commandments would need to be displayed in a format of at least 11 by 4 inches. Horton's comment, this bill just simply seeks to have a display of God's law in the classroom for children to see what he says is right and what he says is wrong. What do you make of this, Dane Sherman?
You know, that's Dodie Horton. That's, you know, she gets a lot of press off of this. They're going to do it. It's going to pass. They'll stick the stickers of wherever. I just wonder if Dodie's going to come to those kindergarten classes, and when the students ask, Miss Smith, what's adultery, that she's there to answer that question?
All right. Well, Representative Barbara Reich Freiberg, Republican from Baton Rouge, was one of three who voted against the bill. Scott Wilfong?
Well, Barbara is a good friend, and I spent money helping Barbara this year, and I'll always help Barbara. Look, both sides have points. This kind of reflects back to my earlier comments. If it didn't take so long to get through these bills, just pass them and be done with it. What bothers me is I was at the Capitol many days this week, and they're sitting in their in-house education for hours going on this stuff, and there's way more important things. Put the Ten Commandments up. Who cares? Let's don't talk about it for half a day, and let's don't make it some big thing. Just put it on the wall next to the picture of the president, and let's get on down the road. I mean, it is a Christian nation. I'm sorry.
Well, it
people
is
forget
a nation,
about that.
Nation,
they don't like
it. It is a nation of Christians. It's not a Christian nation.
It's a nation founded on the God of the Bible.
Well, the God of the Bible is also the God that our next guest follows, and he's not a Christian, and I think it would be inappropriate to call America a Christian nation. We're a country of diversity, and that is our strength, and it includes people of all faiths and even non-believers. 877-217-5757, Patricia in Magnolia Woods. Patricia, good morning.
Good morning. So, if they're going to put the commandments in the classroom, I think they should do the Jesus upgrade, where he said, you know, the two greatest commandments. The second is like it, love thy neighbor as thyself. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
All right. There's not much love in politics right now, Scott.
Oh, if you want to get out the Bible and start finding verses, there's one for all of us to make a squirm somewhere. So,
well, Dane, this is a case in which we have a conservative governor who is a believer, but we just had a governor who was not as conservative, although he was extremely conservative on some issues, but he would not have supported this. I don't think there's any doubt Governor Edwards would say that this is a Pandora's box. So what are your thoughts about where we're going as far as in some, what would some might say, mandating our personal religious convictions?
Well, it was fairly certain that at least at that time, Governor Edwards wasn't running for president. But you got a guy in Landry who's just gone completely obsessive with going on Fox News, trying to, you know, one up everybody. It doesn't matter if it's constitutional. It doesn't matter if it's legal. He's pushing these crazy things. Well, we got to keep in mind, I think you've talked about it, Jim, about the he backed out of a fight, you know, this charity fight that was going to be at Baton Rouge Community College. I think I know why he backed out. He heard that Kim Mulkey was going to be on the other side of the boxing gloves.
All right. 877-217-5757. Another segment with Scott Wilfong and Dane Sherman. And we will go to the phone lines in short order when we return after this timeout on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Dane Sherman on the left, Scott Wilfong on the right, and your number is 877-217-5757. Please be concise in your remarks. Craig in Natchitoches. Craig, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Craig.
Good morning, guys. I think the problem with Jeff Landry saying that Kim Mulkey was disrespecting the flag, it's making it look like they were intentionally doing that. Kim Mulkey has taken their team to the locker room 12 minutes before every game, all the time she's LSU and Baylor. I think Jeff Landry needs to apologize and clarify that Kim Mulkey didn't intentionally do this. And next, by the way, on his Facebook page, he has taken an absolute beating, including people that voted for him.
All right. Well, he's a politician, but my guess is that LSU players, and there's nothing wrong with it, they'll be present for the anthem, but that doesn't mean they have to put their hands over their hearts and stand. Some of them may make some protest, and this is America. You can do whatever you want. You can force somebody to be there, just like you can force them to be there for the kickoff or the tip-off, but you can't force them to act the way that you do, and we're in a country where sometimes our actions might be wrong and the other person might be right. Scott, this has opened a whole area of discussion. And instead of talking about a proposed constitutional convention and many other things that are going on in the legislature right now that are near and dear and in the long term far more important than this, we're talking about this. And the reason we're discussing it on this show is that it's the buzz of Baton Rouge and I'm sure other places in Louisiana right now.
It is, but I mean, in the end, Landry's going to win. They're going to start listening to the national anthem. They'll be on the court. It's a small thing to change. And yes, people really do care about it. And we forget we don't have complete free speech. If I go to work for Mr. Lipsy's company and I go on social media and start talking about gun control and banning all firearms, I bet Mr. Lipsy might have a little talk with me. I might be shown the door.
He's a private businessman, though. That's different than being at a public university.
And do you think the LSU football or basketball teams don't have restrictions on
also,
their social media?
We'll get Richard Lipsy's take on it, but this is a military school, too. And and Jeff Landry, I don't fault him. He's a military veteran. I don't think this is an act. I think he sincerely believes it, as you can – the caller's right. He's taking a beating on his own website, so – it may not be the most popular thing, but he believes it's the right thing. And quite often, I admire people, even when I disagree with them, who go against the grain. James in Metairie. James, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Well, let's see. Forced displays of patriotism under Jeff Landry. Now we're going to have forced Christianity on our children. What these people are doing, these evangelical pastors, they are grooming the children in our classrooms to be future contributors and customers to their churches.
All right. Is that hyperbole or is James on to something, Dane Sherman?
Well, I definitely appreciate what he's saying, and I think James is often on track with these kind of comments. But to illustrate what you're talking about Governor Landry taking a beating, he's lost Newell Norman, former sheriff of Jefferson Parish, WWL radio guy, who just unbraided Landry over what he's done to the LSU women's basketball team. And I'm going to disagree with you. I don't believe do I believe he thinks it's sincerely they should be standing for the anthem? Yeah, I believe he thinks that, but I think it's a bigger picture, and he's using Louisiana like Bobby Jindal did to kind of go up the ladder, and Louisiana does not appreciate that.
All right, Natalie in New Orleans, I know you've been waiting a bit. Natalie, you're on with Scott and with Dane. Hi, Natalie.
Hi there. How are you this morning?
Fine. Thanks for calling.
Good. Thanks. I'm just calling in response to the statement made by a previous caller about the United States being a Christian nation. I just would like to remind the listeners that we do have an allusion to separation of church and state in our U.S. Constitution and our Bill of Rights, that nobody shall be coerced by any religion. And in fact, our current U.S. government since the 1950s and actually the 1940s has violated our founding fathers who established the First Amendment in the clause. They did not use the exact word separation of church and state. However, the whole idea of the establishment of the nation was separation of church and state. And we now have under God in our Pledge of Allegiance, which my mother says she was born in the 40s. And she says that she remembers when they added that clause.
It was under Eisenhower, under President Eisenhower.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And that actually violates the whole establishment of our country by the founding forefathers.
It does, but we also have Christmas as a federal holiday. Should Christmas Day be a federal holiday?
And words that can sound so good are just so wrong so often. When this country was founded, one of the first acts of Congress was to order over 10,000 Bibles, spent taxpayer money on it. The entire history of this country, a chaplain has been employed by the U.S. Congress paying taxpayer money. Yes, it is a nation founded on the belief in God. Our money says in God we trust.
It says
it is not a separation.
You're right.
Of church and state.
I think it, when it gets out of control is when it becomes a sectarian prayer and it excludes people of other faiths, like they're second class citizens, and that is wrong. And that's a place where the line should and often is drawn. But I even at LSU basketball games, I've heard Christian ministers on the court talking about Jesus, and that's great in a church, but at a public university, not so good. David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Dane and Scott.
Mr. Wilfong, nowhere, there are three documents that created the United States of America. Nowhere in those documents is the God of the Bible mentioned. Now, I'll be glad to name those documents, but I challenge you. Can you name the three documents that created the United States of America? If not, I'll do it for you.
Well, I'm aware of the line that says, endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable
rights. Okay, but that's not the God of the Bible, okay?
Well, that's your opinion.
So evidently, you don't know the answer. Let me answer it for you.
No, I don't need your intelligence to enlighten me on the
history
of our country.
Well, no, my intelligence is better than yours. Let me name the three documents.
The Creator created me and Jim and you.
One at a time.
The Creator is the God of the Bible.
David, you go ahead and you name the three documents, and we'll move on down the line.
Okay, the three documents that created the United States, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and the Treaty of Paris. I'm sorry, Mr. Wilfong.
All right. Henry at the Country Club. Thank you, David. Henry, you're on with Dane and Scott. Hi, Henry.
Well, good morning, Mr. Jim. Good morning, Mr. Dane. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I just got one question about this mandatory Pledge of Allegiance standing thing. Do you think that might be part of Governor Landry's short man syndrome?
All right.
Thank y'all very much.
That's a cheap shot. And
well, your caller's intelligence is decreasing by the day. We need to get Mr. Lipsy on here to get some wisdom.
Well, Landry is not a tall man, but he's taller than Edwin Edwards or Buddy Romer or some other governors. And we haven't had a governor over 6 feet tall since John Julian McKithen. So. We do have the tallest state capitol, but we've elected the governors who are not as tall as other governors across the country. There's no Bill Clinton or Gavin Newsom in the mix, and I'm sure Scott's
happy
about that. Carol in Jefferson. Carol, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hello, Carol.
Yeah, the Christian Ten Commandments. Does the Christians actually hold the Saturday holy? And also, maybe we need to stop worshiping the flag if we're going to post the Ten Commandments.
All right. We only have a minute left, but Dane, a listener asked about vaccines. There's a move to lessen requirements for vaccines. What do you make of this?
Yeah, bad decision, anti-science, not good. That's how I view the lack of vaccines. We're going to end up having measles outbreaks in our schools. Not a good thing. I'm as dumbfounded about that as I am Jeff Landry's attack on the basketball.
And
player.
I'm dumbfounded how we need to do that. How do we still have COVID? Because we got that vaccine like 3 years ago. And if we have a vaccine, it should be gone, shouldn't it? I don't understand how there's still COVID. I have a friend that got COVID last week.
People aren't dying from it the way they were before, though, Scott.
Well, they aren't dying of a lot of things.
Like well, I think the vaccine has been quite helpful, and that's one of the things that Donald Trump should be taking credit for, but he doesn't.
That's true.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Always a pleasure to talk with you, and we'll have the incomparable Richard Lipsey next, the man who has been active in education, politics, and business in this state for many years. We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Friday Politics on the two preeminent public radio stations in Louisiana, WWNO New Orleans 89.9 and WRKF 89.3. We thank station manager Paul Mawson for allowing us to be on both stations on Fridays. And if you'd like to join the conversation, we're turning the page, and we're joined by a Louisiana giant, Richard Lipsey. 877-217-5757 is our number, and emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Happy to be here, Jim. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, and it is an honor for me that tomorrow night at the Hilton, where Huey Long once held court, the Hilton in Baton Rouge, 7 o'clock, with a reception at 6, there will be a new class for this year's Louisiana Political Hall of Fame, and it is headlined by former Governor Edwards and Richard Lipsey, but among the others, the Carter family of St. Helena Parish, State Representative Robbie Carter, both preceded and succeeded John Bell Edwards in the Louisiana House, former State Representative Joe Delpit, the first black councilman in Baton Rouge, and of course his family owns the Chicken Shack. Joe Delpit is a true giant. He was Speaker Pro Tem of the House of Representatives in 1984. He's in the class, as is Lewis Lambert, who lost a close one by fewer than 9,000 votes in 1979 to David Connor Treen. Dan Bornay, the former head of the Chemical Association, the voice of the Valley at LSU since 1986, former associate political aide to Edwin Edwards and Russell Long. Ed Anderson, who covered politics in Louisiana for 44 years, mostly at the Times-Picayune. The late Ed Anderson died in 2015 at the age of 67. Yours truly, Jim, and Richard Lipsey, who, as I said, of all of us, has the most varied life of all, and we could zone in on any facet of his life and spend 3 or 4 hours, but he has been with us. It's been a few years, and I was honored that he was on this program on November 22nd, 2013, the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination. And I mentioned in the open that when he was in his early 20s, fresh out of LSU, he went to work at the White House working for President John Fitzgerald Kennedy, a boy who grew up in Baton Rouge, native of Selma, Alabama, though, correct?
Native of Selma, Alabama.
Well, first of all, how'd you end up in Baton Rouge?
Interesting. First of all, thank you again for having me, and thank you for mentioning the Louisiana Political Hall of Fame, because I am so flattered to be included with such distinguished gentlemen to be elected to that tomorrow night. And I think it's going to be fun, and proud of you for being selected, and can't wait to hear what all these gentlemen have to say. But I was born in Selma, Alabama, and my father had a uncle, and his name was Steinberg, that had various New Orleans, Baton Rouge, Memphis, Tennessee, Steinberg, Hyde, and Fur companies. And it was during the war. Dad was in the National Guard at the time, and he could move around, and the man that was running the company here in Baton Rouge went into the Army. And so my uncle, great uncle, asked Dad if he would move to Baton Rouge and run this business. And that was in 1943.
You were four here.
And he said, when the war is over, I'll sell you the business if you want it. And that's what happened.
Well,
Dad bought it in 1945.
Mm-hmm. I remember that store. In fact, Collis Temple told me that was his first job working for you.
Yeah, it is amazing through the years how many people I'll still walk along the street or be in an airport somewhere in New York or overseas, and somebody will walk up to me, "Oh, Mr. Lipsy, I worked for you in 1956, and I was an LSU student." It's been a great run. That was a great story.
Well, in 1956, Richard Lipsy would have been all of 17 years old, and he was a part of history, and he got a job working for President Kennedy, this kid from Baton Rouge. It's been a while since you've told the story, but how did that happen?
I was stationed at Fort Polk, Louisiana, and the new general, a man by the name of Major General Philip C. Wheel, transferred in to take command of Fort Polk. And at the time, I was the only one, the 4009th from Baton Rouge reservist, left, and I knew the post better than anybody. I'd been there the longest. So the chief of staff asked me to give the general a tour of the post. I did. That night, the general, when we got back from the tour, said, "Come by my house. I want you to meet my family." It was that simple. Went in, had a cocktail, which I now was not a drinker in those days, had a cocktail, and he said, "I would like you to be my aide." I did not know what an aide was. Yeah. And he explained to me what the duties of a general's aide was. And so we started, lo and behold, less than 2 months later, the commanding general, chief of staff of the Army, called General Wheel and said, "Look, I have an opening at the Military District of Washington. I know you're from Alexandria, Virginia, and this would bring you close to home. Would you like to take over the job at running Washington?" And General Wheel said yes. He took me with him, and that's how we ended up in Washington.
And you ended up seeing President Kennedy just about every day.
The day we got to Washington, the chief of staff told General Wheel to go directly to the White House because we would be in charge of all ceremonies in Washington, mm-hmm. all dignitaries that came to Washington. Any appointment, important event that transpired in Washington, General Wheel was responsible for. So we went mm-hmm. directly to the White House. We walked in. We were ushered into the president's office. President got up, came around the table, shook our hands, said, "Gentlemen, let's sit here." And there was a little round table and a little settee on each side of it. And General Wheel sat in one side. The president sat on the other side. And he said, "Hey, Lieutenant, you sit right there in my rocking chair." And I just sat right next mm-hmm. to him in his rocking chair. We there 30 minutes, maybe, longer, but long enough that he remembered my name every time I came to the White House and eventually asked me to work at the White House to be a social aide. At night, I worked for the general during the day, and I'd work at the White House at night.
He was only president about 1,000 days, and he died November 22nd, 1963, 46 years old. And when the autopsy was conducted, you were not with him in Dallas, but when he was brought back to Washington for the autopsy, you were there.
Well, it was...
You were the only military.
The circumstance was that they were flying the body back, and General Wheel told me, he said, when we get the body off the airplane, you go with the body. I'm going with Jackie. We're going to Bethesda Naval Hospital. We're going up to the 17th floor to discuss the arrangements that Jackie would like for the president's burial, funeral. And he said, you don't leave the body. He reached in his drawer and pulled out an Army 45 and a web belt. He said, here, put this on. He said, you are responsible for that body. And so we got it off the airplane. Only time I left that body from the time it got to Washington to the time we buried him was to go back to my BOQ a couple of times and change clothes. But immediately we went to the hospital. I sat there a little over 3 hours while the doctors performed the autopsy.
You were in the room.
Only person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And then Garla's funeral home came in, and I sat there another 3.5 hours and watched them put him back together. And when they brought the casket in the room, the 3rd Army Infantry.
Was it a casket?
It was a casket. They brought him in a casket and put him on the table. I unzipped the body bag and laid him there, and I helped a medic
put him on the table.
Wipe the body down, kind of clean the body up. And then after the autopsy, after the funeral home prepared him for burial, I sent our car to the White House. Jackie had told General Wheel what she wanted the president buried in. We went and got the suit, brought it back.
Mm.
I dressed this same medic, helped me. The two of us dressed the president, and then we had a new casket that she had wanted. And we lifted him, put him in his casket, and closed it.
And you said that he was handsome even in death.
I'm sorry.
You said he was handsome.
The man was brilliant. He laid there, of course, a naked body on the table, the morgue table. He didn't have an ounce of fat on him, very muscular, and a true great-looking specimen of a man. He was a good-looking guy, and he was very fit, but, you know, he had his problems. He had serious back problems.
We'll talk more after this. This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Pleased to have the audience at WWNO New Orleans, joining the audience with WRKF in Baton Rouge, and a true giant in Louisiana. Richard Lipsey is with us, and he was the soldier assigned to President John Kennedy, and he was with him until the end, the very end. You just heard, if you were listening a moment ago, he was the person who put him on the table, took him out of the coffin, put him on the table for his autopsy on the night of 22 November 1963, when Kennedy was all of 46 years old. Now, you were 24, and when we're 24, we probably think of somebody as 46 as being old. Think of how young he was.
It's remarkable, and you're right. He was such a distinguished person. He was so smart. The man had vision. He knew where our country wanted to go. If you go back, I wish I'd listened to his speeches as carefully when he gave them as I have in later years when I read them. We have not had a president before or after, one maybe exception, Abraham Lincoln, that could give a speech like John Kennedy did. And you need to read his speeches. They're beautiful, they're eloquent, but they're so precise. They show the vision for the country, where we should be, where we should be going. And he was absolutely a remarkable man. I could, you know, he had a speech writer like everybody else. and I would stand next to him, and he always had his speech typed out. Every line had a mark on it where he edited it, right, changed the words, and got it back to the way John Kennedy wanted to give that speech.
Well, he did win a Pulitzer Prize, and we had his primary speechwriter, Ted Sorensen, on this show before Ted died, shortly before he died. And Ted Sorensen said that was bull, that Kennedy did not write Profiles in Courage. He said he wrote it. But he did say, when I asked him about the most famous line, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I said, who wrote that line? And he said, Jim, ask not. I think Ted wrote that line, but Kennedy delivered it with a flourish. And that is my first memory. I was born in January of 58, so I was exactly 3 years old when Kennedy delivered his inaugural address. And I remember, I was at 1954 Fillmore in New Orleans, watching it on a black and white television with my mother. And I remember them playing that soundbite over and over, and I thought, this is a big deal in my little three-year-old mind. And it hit me when he died, when I was five, that he gave his life for his country.
The whole country was shaken, mm-hmm, at the assassination of President Kennedy. He had brought our country together in many, many ways. You know, there are Democrats and Republicans, but John Kennedy led us through some very difficult times, the Berlin crisis, the
Cuban Missile Crisis,
the missile crisis, and there's just a lot of problems that we had. But he talked about landing a man on the moon. You know, he talked about...
Well, and he made it happen.
He made it happen. Mm-hmm. He talked about things in the future and where we should be going. He didn't look back. He always looked forward. And I can remember, mm-hmm, sitting in his office when he'd be surrounded by maybe his brother Bobby and two or three other of his advisors, and they would have very lively debates about the subject at hand that day. But the president always, they always came to the conclusion, or a concise conclusion and agreement, which step should be taken next. And like I said, I don't think we've had a president before or after like him.
Well, you came home and made a mark in business, in education. Richard was chair of the Board of Regents 6 years, and there is a bill, and more than a few listeners have implored me to ask you about it, but Governor Landry is backing a bill to grant him the power to appoint chairs of Louisiana's five higher education boards. Is this a good idea, or is this a bridge too far?
Jim, I don't want, you know, the governor's got the prerogative to do what he wants to do, and it's not his bill, but he is backing the bill. And I'm total disagreement with that. The governor, all governors have had the power to appoint the boards, members of the boards, of, mm-hmm, the LSU Board of Supervisors, the Louisiana colleges, all the different institutions, five to Southern University, all the different colleges in the state. He can appoint the boards, but the boards do and should continue to elect the chairperson. It would undermine the integrity of the board to have the governor appoint the chairman. And I with no disrespect to the governor, okay, I just don't think he thought that through. I think he's got the power to appoint everybody on the board. So let the board choose their own leader. It's worked for dozens of years. I don't know what year that started, but it's been a very long time that our education system has worked that way, and it's worked very successfully. And I don't think that the governor should have the right to appoint the chairperson.
Now, the previous discussion, as you can imagine, inspired more than a few emails. And here's one from Don on Donmore. And I think this gentleman goes to your synagogue. He says, ask Richard if we're going to display the Ten Commandments, which ones will it be? The Catholic ones, the Protestant ones, the Jewish ones? This is an issue that in America, I thought we allowed people of all faiths to be treated respectfully and equally. What do you make of the Ten Commandments move?
That's come up time and time again. The Ten Commandments is the Ten Commandments. The verbiage may be a little different in each religion, the way they were interpreted out of the Bible, but the Ten Commandments is just the Ten Commandments. I don't think it has to be displayed anywhere. You know what it is. It's the prerogative of each church and each religion and each synagogue if they mm-hmm. want to display it. And in our synagogue, we display the Ten Commandments just as Moses held it. I think it's wonderful that it is displayed in churches. I don't think it should be displayed in schools, as I heard you discussing earlier.
I didn't say that. I think Scott did, but I understand people who are of faith who believe that it's a good thing,
all should live by the Ten Commandments. I have no objection to that. We should all live our lives by the Ten Commandments.
There you go.
But
what about the national anthem controversy? Is that a significant searing issue, or is that the issue du jour?
It is such a waste of time to talk about that. Kim Mulkey has this, since she's been at LSU in the 20 years, some odd years she was at Baylor, the same routine. They come out, they practice, and mm-hmm. it's a psychological buildup. When they finish, they go back into the locker room. And I've been privy to hear, I wasn't in the room, but I could hear her pregame talk. And boy, she really gets those kids excited and ready to play. Mm-hmm. And she knows the timing, and I don't remember exactly whether it's a minute and 40 seconds or 2 minutes and 10 seconds before the tip-off. And she wants those kids to run out there and be ready to play.
There you go.
They've already practiced in that. But the point is, she did not break her routine. She did not do anything to show any disrespect to it, to the national anthem, anybody else.
But I know of no one who has more reverence for LSU as the old war school than you. You probably had to shave your head when you were a freshman.
My head more, little purple and gold beanie when I was a freshman.
And you have been active in making sure the Memorial Tower remains pristine.
It's one of my proudest moments. It took me 14 years of getting first to get LSU to cooperate. And then thankfully, we had Governor John Bel Edwards, and he and Jay Darden helped push through $4 million through the legislature, seed money to get us started. And then myself and a couple of my friends raised another $9 million. And we had a $13 million total renovation of Memorial Tower. It has got the most beautiful LSU Military Museum in it now. And it's always been the first place that when a kid comes to campus or visitors come to campus, they want to see Memorial Tower. It was dilapidated.
I know, but it's a showplace now. Thank you, Richard Lipsey. See you tomorrow night. Until next week, stay safe and stay tuned.